David Grimm, editor of Science's free online daily news site, Science Now, joins us to talk about the latest science stories. Hi, David.
Hey, Rob.
So what stories do you have for us today?
Well, Rob, today we're all about tiny. We're going to talk about tiny amounts of water on the moon, a tiny eyeless worm that can still sense light, and finally, tiny particles for treating cancer.
Well, let's start with tiny amounts of water on the moon. I thought when astronauts brought back parts of the moon, they had done that analysis.
Well, they had, Rob. In fact, the manned missions to the moon in the 1960s and the 1970s did bring back soil from the moon. And one of the big things scientists were interested in at the time is there any evidence for water? And when they analyzed these samples, they didn't see anything.
But now?
But now scientists are taking a second look at those samples. And since the 1960s and 1970s, the techniques for detecting water and other molecules present in very small amounts have vastly improved. So a new team of researchers said, hey, let's try giving these samples another look. So they use these very sensitive techniques, and lo and behold, they found trace amounts of water in volcanic glass beads.
Where do these beads come from?
Well, 3 billion years ago, the moon was a much more active place than it is now, and there was a lot of volcanic activity. So material from deep within the moon was shot out to the surface and resulted in these volcanic beads. And it turns out these beads are hiding trace amounts of water.
How much water are we talking about here?
We're talking about 46 parts per million.
Would that mean that perhaps we could mine the moon for water so that it could support a moon colony or something like that?
Well, that's the implication. I mean, clearly this research isn't indicating that there's liquid water anywhere on the moon, but it does indicate that if there was a lot of this trapped water, even if it's in very small amounts, that someday, maybe in the very, very far future, astronauts may be able to mine this water out of these volcanic glass beads and be able to utilize the water in some way. But the more important implication is that this solves a bit of a riddle about how the moon formed.
How so?
Well, the going theory is that billions of years ago, a Mars-sized object slammed into the Earth and created a bunch of debris that orbited the Earth for a while and eventually coalesced into the moon. But astronomers wondered, if there's so much water on Earth and the moon came from Earth, why is there no water on the moon? And now these researchers are finally showing, hey, there is a bit of water on the moon. So these new findings may answer this cosmic conundrum.
Well, from the conundrum of water on the moon to the conundrum of how an eyeless worm sees light.
Well, Rob, this story is about a tiny worm known as C. elegans. It's actually only about a millimeter long, so you can really only see it under a microscope. And these worms don't have any eyes, and they spend all of their life underground.
Why would they need the ability to sense light then?
Exactly. And scientists had long assumed that they were, for all intents and purposes, blind. But a group of researchers noticed that sometimes when they would shine lights on these worms, the worms would stop in their tracks or even reverse course. So they suspected that even without eyes, the worms had some way of sensing light.
So did they test different types of light?
Yeah, well, first of all, they wanted to confirm if these worms could actually sense light. And if so, they wanted to find out what kind of light do the worms sense. And after a series of experiments, they found that the worms were most sensitive to a type of light known as UVA light, which is the light that gives us suntans
and sunburns.
And sunburns, exactly.
Which would be important for a worm trying to avoid dangerous exposure by being above ground.
Right. And the researchers speculate that the reason these worms might be sensitive to this light is because if they accidentally make their way above ground, they'll know very quickly that they're in a dangerous place, that these rays are harmful to them, and then go back underground again. And you can see a neat little video of a worm reversing course on the site.
Did the researchers figure out how this sensory system works?
Well, the great thing about C. elegans, and it's actually a very popular worm for laboratory study, is that scientists pretty much know what every cell in the C. elegans body does. And C. elegans have about 302 neurons. So by a process of elimination, the scientists were able to find 4 neurons that seemed to be responsible for helping the worm sense light. And what was even more interesting was they found that one of these neurons produced tiny electrical currents whenever the worm was exposed to light, much like our eyes produce electrical currents that go to our brain and tell us what we're seeing. And in fact, the worms utilized a couple of molecules that our eyes utilize when we see light. So what's really cool here is not only finding that these quote-unquote blind worms can actually sense light, but this gives us a glimpse, if you will, of how far back in time sight may go. In fact, if we look at this from an evolutionary context, it means that the first creatures may have been sensing light as early as 500 million years ago.
Well, from the cells in worms that allow them to sense light to the cells that go wrong in the body when cancers occur. How are nanoparticles being used to take on cancer?
Well, Rob, the problem with treating cancer is that chemotherapy or any sort of therapy where you're injecting a lot of drugs into the body tends to have some pretty severe side effects.
Because it goes everywhere in the body?
Exactly, because it's hard, especially with drugs, to target specific areas of the body. And so for years, researchers have been trying to figure out if there's a way to make these drugs more specific so that they only hit the cancer and don't affect healthy parts of the body. And this new study concerns a strategy known as nanoparticles. And these are tiny particles, much smaller than a cell, that are made from various compounds. And in this study, they're made from fat-associated molecules. And they can be tethered to specific drugs and made to go specific areas in the body. But it's easier said than done, and there's been a lot of trouble actually getting this to work. But this new study shows some promise, at least in mice, for treating metastasis. And that, as you know, is where cancer cells start out in one place in the body, but invade other parts of the body. And the researchers in this study focused on a receptor called AV-beta-3. And what's important about this receptor is it's found on blood vessels that feed tumors. And the more tumors get fed and the more blood vessels that go to tumors, the more likely a tumor is to metastasize and at least to grow and become more of a problem than it was before.
Does the body use this receptor for any other function?
No, and that's the great thing about it is it's only present in blood cells that feed tumors, so it's a very specific way of just targeting tumors. And the researchers found that when they took mice that were implanted with human pancreatic tumor cells, so they essentially gave these mice cancer, and then they injected them with these nanoparticles tethered to a chemotherapeutic drug called doxorubicin, that after 11 days, the mice that received the targeted nanoparticle had 82% less metastasis than mice that received nanoparticles that weren't specifically targeted to this AV-beta-3 receptor.
Well, how does this therapy compare to regular chemotherapy treatments?
Well, with regular chemotherapy treatments, say the analogous treatment with doxorubicin, you would have to inject 15 times as much of this drug into the body as you would with nanoparticles. And that's because you have to inject so much because it's going everywhere. But with the nanoparticles, you're injecting a far less amount. And in fact, the researchers found that when they injected what would be normal chemotherapeutic levels of doxorubicin in the mice lost about 18% of their body weight, much like humans might do because of nausea and other factors. But when they were injected with the nanoparticles tethered to doxorubicin, they only lost 0.8% of their body weight. So not only are the researchers showing that the strategy is effective for treating cancer in mice, they're also showing that the side effects are really minimized when you use these targeted nanoparticles.
Well, what are the hurdles then that need to be overcome in order for these type of treatments to be used on people?
Well, there are lingering questions about the toxicity of using any sort of nanoparticle. You know, these things have just come around recently, and so scientists really still haven't fully studied what their health effects are. Is it safe to put these things into the body? So that's going to be one major concern about taking any therapy like this from mice to humans.
Okay. Well, thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Rob.
So what other stories are you looking into for Science Now?
Well, Rob, we're looking to stories about what makes an avalanche, why biofuels may not be as green as we thought. And finally, we've got a reporter down at a meeting in Miami about coral reefs, and we're going to be posting some stories about what climate change means for the future of coral reefs and also in general for fish in the ocean. So be sure to check out the site.
David Grimm is the editor of Science Now, the free online daily news site of science. You can check out the latest science stories at sciencenow.sciencemag.org.